Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 13th on the West Coast, now December the 14th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all of you listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and hope you keep tuning in to the show every night of the week, not just tonight, because I know that there are a lot of people listening in because our guest also appears on another radio show heard around the world with Drew Raines, and that show, A Marine's Disquisition, is heard several times during the day, depending on where you are. So we know why you're here tonight. It's not because of me. And with that, I'm going to go straight ahead and bring on tonight's guest. He hosts his own show on the microeffect.com. The show is called The Story Behind the Story. He's heard there from Monday through Wednesday, and he's a frequent guest on Evident Footprints. In fact, he's been our regular Monday night guest. He's a naturopath, an author, a teacher, a PhD as well, and he's our good friend, Dr. A. Truat. True, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Don. Golly, yeah, your show's successful because of you. What are you talking about?
Well, it's my guests are making it very popular, you know, so got to give credit where it's due.
Well, it's my pleasure to be on the air. I'm glad to help.
There's, you know, we didn't plan on talking about anything, and I think we could talk about any topic we want tonight. There has been so much disinformation out there recently, and I've been ranting and raving and doing a lot of research on all of these YouTube videos that are coming out regarding TSA. There's this campaign to get people to move out of the Gulf of Mexico area of the United States. And there were those out there that are aiding and abetting in that process. And it's not that people shouldn't be compassionate, because there are people suffering. But you see the same people involved at every stage of these shenanigans that are going on. We know about the financial corruption. We know about the ecological corruption that's going on, the military-industrial complex complicity in hiding the facts about the Gulf of Mexico incident, and the TSA scanners and the handling, literally, no pun intended, or should I say pun intended, the handling of the passengers. It's all promoting a certain mindset. These messages that are coming out from certain people or are posting them on YouTube, telling the world what's about to happen, and it has the usual undertone of all the research that we do, the things that we uncover about the secret societies and the corrupt religious organizations around the world and the corrupt banks and on and on and on. What is your take in that regard, as to what all of this means? We haven't really gone into this area too much, you and I. I think it would be interesting.
Well, I think all inclusively, Don, it's just a major psyops program. We, like I said on my show just tonight, if you go back to the pre-9/11 America versus post 9/11, you see the massive buildup of what the Washington Post would describe as top secret America. You have 875,000 individuals, you know, darn near just a few short of a million, right, individuals with top secret clearance, were before 9/11, there was probably 30,000. Why all this upbuild? You know, and the Homeland Security Department that really owes its existence to 9/11. I mean, let's face it, without the so-called specter of Al-Qaeda and this Islamic terrorism, there would be no need for a Department of Homeland Security. And yet this new bureaucratic boondoggle has just continued to expand and to grow. We've got to remember what happened when the government, in all of its benevolent glory, said we need to go from analog to digital communication signals in our television and our radio commitments. And so the FCC, when they went over to digital and the increased bandwidth, as you know, that a full one-third, 33 and a third of the available digital station signals was reserved for Department of Homeland Security. This is commercial bandwidth, Don, worth millions, billions of dollars. Why Homeland Security when they're a structure that really should not be in existence? Because, as you and I both know, 9/11 is and always has been an inside job. This was a controlled demolition from the beginning. So you see when you see all these things happening, like you said, the TSA manipulations, the psyops going on, it's an attack against the middle America, in my opinion. It's an attack against we the people. These things just start clicking into a combination lock, if you will. These things seem to be disjointed at first, but if you look at them in the macrocosm of the whole worldview of the ruling elite cabal, it all fits. You know, there's no reason to have a housing bubble in the first place, let alone a housing bubble collapse. Mm-hmm. It goes back to, you know, a fraudulent currency, a fraudulent banking system, and a fraudulent 9/11.
Yes. There's a recent email going out, and I mentioned this. That's a great answer, by the way. I agree with everything you said. In fact, you sound like you've been listening to all of last week's shows, because that's what we've been talking about, those very things. You're just chiming in, and I've been telling people this TSA stuff, this is all faked video primarily, or faked stories. Faked audio, faked journalism, the whole nine yards. In the last case, the nude woman in bra and panties in a wheelchair made up like a Barbie doll is actually an android. I don't know if you're aware of that. We did talk about that on some shows this past week. It's an android. In fact, that whole thing is a Hollywood production of special effects. It might as well have been Eddie Murphy there standing in line and sitting in the wheelchair. That's how desperate they are to have an impact on people. And a lot of people fell for that. But then after we pointed that out and we devoted a whole show to that, and then identifying who the people are as well, who are part of this. You see that they're making mistakes. There's a desperation behind what they're doing. But the average individual just thinks it may be a bit strange, but that's what happened because they saw it on TV or they saw it on the internet. There's a lot of that going around. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that this is a big psyop. There is a new 9/11 video about the Pentagon that must have taken some time to put together because of the interviews. But there are some law enforcement people interviewed describing the path of the alleged plane that crashed into the Pentagon. And five separate witnesses independently draw a similar route on a photograph of that area, on an aerial photograph. They describe how the plane flew, how it sounded, how it descended, how it banked and made a sharp right turn. All of the things that they responded to when they were asked questions matched. And one could only determine they were telling the truth. Now, there's another individual at the end who was a taxi driver who was actually told a lie. It was quite obvious. And was it a coincidence when it came out in the film? And he, by his own admission, that his wife works for the FBI and did at that time as well. And when he thought he wasn't being recorded, he said things that actually could be used against what he said when he knew he was recorded. It's brilliant. The piece is brilliant. Now, that substantiates the things that we've been saying for a number of years, doesn't it? When we say there was no plane. There could not, no plane that crashed into the building is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's funny that you have these supposed eyewitness accounts that are so canned and so coached is the best, probably a better word. And yet you have all of these surveillance cameras around the building suddenly have disappeared. You know, you don't have any video evidence of a commercial airliner going in. And of course, there's just no way in this reality that a commercial airliner went into that Pentagon. There's just no way.
Yes, and there were so many different accounts from people that substantiated that the explosion occurred at the top of the building. I mean, even that security camera caught that photo, assuming that what they showed us was actually the security camera, because they're very likely, if something made a hole, there very likely was some camera that photographed a missile going into the building. And that's why they showed us this 1 second clip with another, you know, it's basically a loop is what they showed us, 4 seconds or something like that. And so it's on, it takes a picture, and then it goes off for a second, and then it takes another picture. Seems like that's a stupid way to do business. As much as they like to spend money on equipment, they would have a 24-hour tape, would they not? Even 7-Elevens have those. You're talking about one of the biggest military targets in the world if somebody wanted to start a war. So, I find it hard to believe that the only film that they could provide us with is sitting next to a traffic cone on the ground. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous.
Of course. Everything's about that. You know, there's just no way the wingspan matches. It's just not possible. It was a cruise missile and designed to attack the very wing of the Pentagon that was investigating the crimes, the $2.3 trillion loss of funds under Dov-Zakheim. You know, I can't fathom that much money. I can't hardly fathom $1 billion, but $2.3 trillion goes missing. The Pentagon is investigating, the SEC and the FBI. The investigations are centered in the World Trade Center Building 7. Isn't that just coincidence that the very wing that has the smoking gun files is hit by a cruise missile, and Building 7 is not hit by anything, but it collapses? You know, there's got to be motivation. There's 2.3 trillion reasons why.
Yes, and then there's a lot of motivation in New York City as well. You know, when one question I don't hear asked enough, I actually haven't heard it asked, I think I've brought it up on a few shows, is who knew to position cameras to film the demolition of Building 7? Who knew where to put the cameras? And they show different angles of it. That's what's really crazy, is that some of the independent YouTube producers even came up with that footage. Where did these people get this footage? You know, how did they know to film that? And many of the videos that came out borrowed the original videos, film clips of the No Day Brothers film. That was another anomaly there. How did those people get those copies like that? How does one take a picture of an empty office suite in the World Trade Center and have it on video and have the camera roving around an empty office suite when the building was turned to dust? How did they get that? Who provided that? Anything you want to say on that?
Well, it's a good question, and just to have it even videotaped is a pretty convincing idea. They knew it was going coming down, and who is they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the for what purpose? Yeah.
Well, we have a caller, Dr. Ott. Would you like to take a call?
You bet, surely.
Okay, we have Eve in California. Eve, welcome to the show. A question or comment for Dr. Ott?
Good evening, gentlemen. Yes, just some information you may not have heard, but then again, I know you're kind of all over the place and, you know, you hear a lot. 1995, construction began on New York Hotel and Casino. It was finished in 1997. You know what's missing? The Twin Towers.
No trade centers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Las Vegas. Las Vegas is New York. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's. I had actually comment about that a few years ago when I was guest on another show, Eve.
Really?
Is when we were doing a 9/11 special, and we took video pictures of that. Hotel Casino in Vegas. 1995, 97. Why would they leave the Twin Towers out?
Well, do you remember Aaron Russo's interview? Or not? Yeah, he did have an interview with, I think it was David Rockefeller. And David Rockefeller was inviting him into the, you know, into their group, so to speak.
Who is this you're speaking about?
That was Aaron Russo.
That was that, Nicholas Rockefeller, according to
Nicholas.
Eric.
Okay. Anyway, his interview was, inviting him, you know, into their so-called group, the Illuminatis, whatever. And part of that conversation, I do recall him saying that, they had plans and that it was going to change the world and so on and so forth the way that we know it now. You can probably go online. People can go online and hunt that down for Aaron Russo and listen to that interview that he had. And interestingly enough, I think the interview was in Vegas at the time. And it was before 2001. So the powers that be, you know, when they were building this hotel and everything else, you know, they knew what was going on, obviously.
Do you think that's actually how they make an announcement that they're inviting someone into their group, that they do it via an underling? Do you think that story's true?
Well, actually, Aaron, it was an interview with Aaron.
Yes, that garners quite a bit of credibility, doesn't it? But just think outside the box for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you honestly think that that's how it goes down?
That the interview went down like that?
I'm saying the invitation to join the Illuminati. I'm familiar with the story. Aaron's
right.
National theatrical screening coordinator for his video.
Mm-hmm.
So I had conversations about this, but my gut tells me that that garnered him a lot of credibility.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it did. Yeah.
But
it did.
I don't think it goes down like that, to tell you the truth.
Oh, you don't. What would be your interpretation?
Well, I think someone much higher up, I think there's a totally different hierarchy that deals with that.
Right.
You know, it's not like, hey, you should join the Illuminati. It's not like joining a golf club or, you know, country club.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There was more to the interview, but, my main point of that interview was the fact that, you know, he was releasing some information at that point in time that was going to make a change, okay, in the way we perceive, you know, the United States and what was going to happen. And I think that alludes to the fact that this, you know, 911 deal was going to happen, and that's where they were going to make a change and everything. I mean, after all, you know, the whole program was set up, and when Bush came in, you know, all of the Patriot Act was already written. So the plans were already laid. That was obvious.
Yeah, that's a good
point. And that's all as far as, you know, everything else about the interview, I don't know what's true and what's not, but that piece of information fits into the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. You do know that Aaron Russo wasn't Italian, right?
No, I don't. I don't know that he was or he wasn't. I mean,
no,
just the last name, S-O, with an O at the end, usually designates somebody as, you know, an Italian with an I or an O at the end, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're, you know, an Italian.
Well, the Zionists like to use the Ashkenazi names and aliases of Ireland or Italy, the three I's, okay? That's what I find repetitively in my research.
Okay.
When I'm researching the identity of infiltrators into our government, that's a general rule, and that's how they hide a lot of their operatives too.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. So the name Russo, the name Russo serves the purpose like the name Smith would too.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've seen Lillian that.
Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, there are. Dr. Ott, do you want to comment?
No, I'm just listening.
Well, I believe you had an interview with Aaron Russo also. Pointed him in some very interesting directions.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I met him, you know, that was there at Pasadena, actually. He gave me him and another fellow was there after that meeting, gave me a card, and we met the next day for lunch, and it was pretty interesting. He was planning, at least he told me, to do an expose originally on exposing the tax protesting movement as a bunch of right-wing nuts, you know. But he had to change his thrust of that because of the honest investigation led him to realize there's no law, and that's what was amazing about that the documentary. He did a good job with that, I think.
Yeah, I think he did too. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few people that were brought into the video that sort of stirred my suspicion about a couple of things, because they were promoting certain things that we all know were going on. It didn't have to be put into that movie. When it's put into a movie, it's intended to affect a lot of people. And you could say, well, Aaron did that in a movie to reach a lot of people. But I'm speaking about the certain characters and the certain themes that they were bringing out, because it created a lot of fear. And while that was going on, while everybody was paying attention to all that fear, they were setting all this stuff up right under our noses. And, you know, we talk about that every night. The financial corruption on right. Wall Street and the banks and in the courts and in the legal system and in the schools and in the cities and towns and the counties and the states and in politics, in religion. We talk about all of that stuff. So there were certain things in there that were designed to give a certain message. Of course, DVD actually set up Ron Paul's candidacy. Because it gave us an early glimpse at what he was going to talk about. And he didn't really spill all the beans, but he talked about...
No, he did not.
The IRS and you know, this really needs to be looked at because this appears to be unconstitutional. That set him up for his candidacy. And they got a lot of people paying attention to that while they were able to manipulate things in the background. Remember
Well, isn't Ron Paul a Mason?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought, yeah. And he was really tooting the horn of, you know, a financial report?
I wouldn't say that he was doing that at the time. Maybe somewhat. I mean, he would bring up things about the economy and how they were spending money and, you know, he was preparing himself for a run, and I think that movie and his appearance in it was to get us used to seeing him. I'm not saying that that's good or bad. I see that as intentional, as part of how the movie was put together.
Talking about the Federal Reserve. He was going for the Federal Reserve to get a financial report from them.
He went into that as well, of course. Yeah. But, you know, what did he reveal that G. Edward Griffin didn't reveal in his The Creature from Jekyll Island, you see?
Oh, yeah.
This was for the people that hadn't read and so could be influenced. I found Catherine Albrecht's appearance a bit anomalous in the movie and to put out the fear about RFID chips. We know it's a reality, but you see, they weren't talking about the vaccinations, were they? They were talking about ID chips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and pizza, buying your pizza and finding out that Big Brother knows everything about you.
Your street and your address and you're at this corner, yeah.
Well, so that's supposed to put the fear in you. Don't buy pizza and you'll be all right. You know, it's
don't
a
use
bit...
your computer. Don't use your computer and you'll be all right.
Yeah, but there were redeeming qualities in the movie. I agree with Dr. Rock. I just don't. There are a lot of things that appeared to have been intentionally put into the movie, and I don't think they were Aaron Russo's decision to do that. It's just a gut feeling I have. Dr. Ott, we can disagree, right?
I'm just I'm looking at just the central theme about the IRS and show us the law. That's the rest of that. I agree with you. It just didn't fit. Albright is you know, Harvard and her cronies. She doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, when they were up at, she was invited to come up at this rally we had there on vaccination, basically there in Montana back in 2009. That was just right before. Don's death up there. Okay, Ingra was there, and Catherine was invited, and she just blasted everybody involved, myself, Bill Deagle, everybody there, saying, "Well, this is all fear mongering, this pandemic is a non-event. What you really have to look for is this RFID programming and yada yada yada." She was. To the point of being just a wet blanket. How can you say that any issue is more important when it comes to exposing this corruption? We interviewed I was on her radio show right directly in the station. She set up to expose this all, you know, expose me and Deagle as frauds, and I gave her all the documentation. You know, because she says, you can't document anything. I says, well, how do you know? You don't even know me. Here's just what I brought. Come back to my office. I'll give you tons more, and I'll email you. And after I presented all the documentation to her, she wouldn't quit, trying to discredit us, even though she knew there was more than enough evidence. So it just, it showed me that she's absolutely false, completely false.
Yeah. See, now, I use my intuition and a little bit of logic, and I say to myself,
"You got some good intuition."
this person doesn't appear to fit. You know, the purpose for her being in there was for fear mongering and misdirection. Because while this was going on, while everyone was paying attention to this wonderfully produced DVD exposing the IRS and the Federal Reserve and invasion of privacy, there was a lot of fear-mongering going on, and they were in Wall Street and Washington, D.C., and banks all over the world stealing hundreds of trillions of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
And plotting all the next scenes that we're experiencing now. That's what was going on then.
So what you're saying and what I'm getting from that is that Aaron was allowed to put this movie together only if he put in those certain aspects that you just went over.
You're pretty smart, Eve.
Well, you pretty much, you know, put it together. But that's it in a nutshell. So, Aaron, you're not putting this movie out unless you put in this person or contact this person, and they'll add to your movie plot, da-da-da-da.
You know, a lot of money was collected for showing that movie. And for selling DVDs, a lot of people were selling them. Mm-hmm. And I questioned some of the people who were selling them because I knew the role that these people were playing at the time in the disinformation campaign. So you create something that's got a lot of good information in it, and it affords you some credibility. Mm-hmm. It opens the door to trust. And why? Right. Because people invested something, even if it was only a dollar. You know, they were selling them for $15, $20, $25. And the young 17-year-old man that was copying these for Aaron never got paid a penny and invested a lot of his personal funds into the equipment to make the copies. Okay. Now, that doesn't fit the image that's portrayed. I have to trust that those people told me the truth, and I had both this young man's father on a show and his mother on a show, and we talked about all these things, not specifically about the problem with Aaron Russo. This isn't bash Aaron Russo day here, just pointing out some things. I think we can critique the film and its historical significance as much as we can the information that didn't need to be there.
Right, yeah. That had to be interjected in order for him to put it out, period.
Yes.
Just like a lot of people that have a lot of very good, authentic information and put books together, and they have to put the books out as, you know, fiction just so they can get it published.
You know, I could ask a rhetorical question, and this fits Dr. Ott as much as it does me. What would be the purpose of stealing someone's research, published research, discussed on hundreds of radio shows, in newspapers, and on the internet, years before it's plagiarized or stolen? What would be the reason for someone doing that, other than to try to discredit that person as not being, you know, the individual that unearthed that information and revealed it to the world? Dr. Rott's done that many times on vaccines and the contents therein, and many, many other things, foods and supplements and all of that. Dr. Rott, would you like to take a stab at that?
Well, there's possible motivations. A lot of it's just trying, you know, just stroking the ego. Other things, of course, are for money. You know, just theft, deception. But it happens a lot. Things I've written and posted suddenly have somebody else's name on it without it changing a word and appearing in other newspapers,
or having it changed completely and say a reliable source. Never naming that person, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you have to look, Eve and Dr. Ott, you have to look at those who are promoting that, because they have to know if they're all so good at their research. The Texas tapeworm is one individual that comes to mind. And, if you've been listening to me long enough, you know who that is. That would suddenly promote this research. Even the big mistake they made, stealing a photograph from my website. I say stealing, lifting the photograph, which I admit is altered by me to examine the deceit that's hidden in it, just by changing the exposure and the contrast. You see, they even used a photo that I explained to the readers in the article, both in the newspaper and on my website, that photograph has been altered to show you its fraudulent nature. And they used that photograph as if it was theirs. In other words,
it's rampant all over in every aspect of society. You know, I mean, I think Dr. Mike was talking, on Dr. Ott's show tonight about, not even wanting to do a patent anymore. As soon as you give them a patent, as soon as you have to give all that information, they steal it from you. And either they put it on the shelf because it's so good that it'll ruin the oil business because you have some invention that'll put us on different type of energy. So they get all the information. They either steal it, shelf it, or they make sure that you can't, you can't do anything with it.
Yeah, the very act of patenting anything is entering into a contract with them. You see,
you immediately
give up your rights when you do that.
And then you could look at what vitamin C, what they did with Lenis Pauling. I mean, I read the studies at Harvard. The other big hospital. I can't think of the name of the hospital right now. But they did, they took his research for vitamin C and they altered what he was supposed to do, what they were supposed to do as far as their medical research on patients. Instead of giving them, say, 10,000 milligrams or 20,000 milligrams for people that had cancer, they gave them like 1,000 or 2,000, and they said it didn't work. And that's what they reported. That was the Mayo Clinic.
So everything
that they take in order to fit, the way that they want society to believe, they change it. And because it's them and they're the establishment, then that's what people believe in, because that's what all the newspapers print, and that's what the AMA and, the medical journals print.
That's what Dr. Ott called at the top of the show, mind control.
Yeah.
Right?
But people are waking up. Kids are waking up. Kids are, the young children, the 15, 16-year-olds. I believe I sent you a 15-year-old over in London. I mean, he's 15 years old, and he sounds like he's about 35. And he was extremely angry over the fact of what, they were doing over in England to, I believe it was raising their
tuition.
I can't think of it, for school.
Tuition.
It was going to cost them a lot more to go to school.
Yeah, that's
called
tuition.
And he was severely mad. I sent that piece to you. It's a little, probably about 3 minutes. I mean, these kids are mad. They know what's going on, and they're not accepting this laying down.
Well, what they did is they devalued the pound, number one, which raises the expense. They're tripling their tuition rates is what
that's
they're
it,
doing.
That's it, the tuition. That's what I was trying to think of, yeah. Tripling the tuition, and these kids are protesting against it. And this young man was 15 years old.
Well, what people don't know is that their tuition is pooled, just like they pool the real estate. In fact, there's no money that changes hands on tuition whatsoever.
Well, you know, apparently it was going to go from, I think it was 3,000 pounds, something like 3,000 pounds to 9,000 pounds, almost 9,000 pounds.
That's $18,000 more, than $18,000. Probably 10 years ago it would have been that much. 20,000. You might as well say it's probably $20,000. Dr. Rott, any comment?
Well, the guys who should be getting upset, they should learn about who really controls the education system. The tuition is the opposite of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, just the G2 level of Freemasonry designs the core curriculum of the university status around the world, and thus to get accredited, the Masonically controlled Board of Regents decides, you know, what you study and what you're cemented into your brain. And when you're finished and you're successful and completed the hoops that they want you to jump through, you're dressed in a ceremonial black robe and given a Masonic mortar board symbolizing the cement they put into to make the brick wall, and your brain is ceremoniously welded into what they want you to believe. Get outside the box and realize that everything in a university setting is designed by high levels of psyops.
Yes. You know, they finance tuition through the college loans. They finance that through insurance policies. And they do this with a multiplicity of individuals up to a certain age. They can't commit suicide within a certain period of time, or the school, the fund itself collapses. That's one of the things that they tell you when they put this together. So you can find one person, and you could actually take a town of, let's say, about 25,000 people and educate those the students that would come out of that for, oh, the real cost would be about $1,000 a year.
Well, my youngest daughter is going to Weber State University now. She's a sophomore. She comes back, and she's real frustrated right now because since just last year, this year, her basic courses are not taught by professors. They're taught by a freaking computer. She goes into the lecture hall, they start the program, and it's just all recorded. It's a program, and you go in, and there's no, if you have a question about how the computer presents, there's nobody live to talk to. And they go into the testing laboratory to take the blessed test. It's all automated. And nobody is getting paid. There's not a paid professor or staff, but it costs the same amount of money.
Did she know that was going to be how they teach there?
Well, no. She's
not happy initially. With it?
Well, she's not happy at all about it. She's and the vast majority of her peers, the students, are just really ticked off about it. They you know, when you're talking about algebra and even, you know, pre-trig, when you're doing – trying to teach these concepts and you're doing it by a computer? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's if you don't keep up, you fail. But
is that all the classes, Dr. Ott?
No, just certain ones. But it's becoming more prevalent. They want to have it. It's a cost saving. But see, it's really about Board of Regents and money again.
Well, that's where you're moving the people, you know, the one-on-one contact, those minds out, and you're bringing in computer robots to teach. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, why don't you just have a implant put in, and you can just boop, 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 download it right in, and you don't have to worry about anything.
It begins with the government. I mean, how many years have we been going through, you call a number, and you end up being transferred 5 to 10 times before you talk to a person, and then 5 or 6 more times until you get the right department, and then that person's out to lunch. You know, they've automated everything. So the expenditures that they're making are made in a certain area, and they know ahead of time we're going to buy X number of computers, so many 100,000 or so many million computers for all of these schools around the country. And they set up the financing, and they set up the derivatives and hedge funds. And they all buy stock in the corporation that's going to get that contract. And they either own or buy into the company that's going to service that contract, and on and on.
Well, and there's a prep school. I got to just jump in. This is from, I think, first grade through sixth grade. It's a private academy in Salt Lake. It caught my eye because as you look, it's called the Jefferson Academy. And right in you know, facing the entryway is this huge glass mirror. It's a glass window structure with the eight-pointed star, the mark of Cain. It's just so drastic, and you walk inside and it's the skylights are all the octagonal eight-pointed stars, a double cross, right, which is the mark of Hammurabi, the mark of Cain, if you understand where that came from in Old Testament research. So I wonder, what in the world is this thing? It looks absolutely Illuminati in the symbolism. So I went in and investigated how to get your children into this special academy, and there's a waiting list because their professors are Chinese, and they teach these kids Mandarin and basically they flat out says, we are here to compete with the high tech Pacific Rim Chinese, basically, in this global marketplace. Oh, I said, how is this happening? Oh, with these modules, we have a completely different way to teach. And they went and showed us, the kids come in, they sit down in front of a computer lab, and these kids are first graders on through sixth grade. And by the time they're finished in sixth grade, they're testing out in high tech approximately a sophomore or junior in college level. But they're given these auditory headphones. It's like they're programming computers, literally, with these kids.
And you didn't believe that they were competing with anyone, did you? I mean,
that's
a cover story.
Well, no, in a way, because the principal was Chinese, and he showed us how they're programming these Chinese high-tech workers to do all this. Just programming like robot Autobots. I said, welcome to a brave new world.
Yes, Eve wanted to chime in for a second.
No, I said it's just drones. They're creating drones, you know, the robots, just like you said. I mean, what's going to happen is people like your daughter that is very unhappy with the system and other people that are out there that are pulling their kids out of all of the public schools and they're homeschooling. And apparently, from what I looked at, that number is continuously rising. There are a lot of families that are very unhappy with the way the educational system is running.
Yeah,
so
do you mind if I ask you a question? What is your occupation? What kind of work are you in? What field?
I just started in insurance.
You are in insurance, okay.
That would be life insurance.
Anything you're familiar with yet? Or
what do you mean, anything I'm familiar with yet?
Well, like I was describing how you can finance a college and its costs, let's say like a state college. You can finance it through insurance policies, health insurance policies.
Yeah, which is what you just said, yeah, Right.
Set up, let's say you could set it up like an annuity.
Right,
and,
okay.
And that will finance it. Or the bigger schools, they may need a whole pool of people. But I was making a statement that the actual raw cost of teaching a child with one person, teaching several classes throughout the week, is about $1,000 a year. Okay? That'll take one teacher through a whole school year. The student won't have a cost there. You can even outfit the school with desks, tables, chairs, a laboratory, whether it's a computer lab or a chemistry lab. You can set all that up at about a cost of $1,000 a student. Now, if you want to stay in business and take advantage of that relationship, it would still be honorable if you charge $2,000 a student and build up a fund, a trust fund for the facility to purchase books, to purchase things that you need to build up the infrastructure of the school. And, you know, whether you want to use competition as a reason for doing that or just to be able to provide a very broad but very application-specific education so that if you want to go into the arts, you teach people to really play music. It's okay to teach them computer music, but they must learn an acoustic instrument. They should learn music theory. They should learn harmony and the music business, publishing, copywriting, you know, composition, arranging, orchestration, audio production. Get them involved in the whole thing. Make them be competent enough to be able to be creative, to perform, and to provide service. What would be wrong with that? But they have to automate everything and take the spiritual factor out of it, you see?
All right,
because
but
you can hide evil intentions in technology.
Mm-hmm, that's
for sure. You
can't
hide it in the spiritual world.
Right. Well, you know, the problem that we have, you know, in Southern California and some of these schools is they're taking music out.
Well, that's what I'm referring to. They're taking our art out if it's not out already.
Right.
You know.
Right. So that's you know, what the parents of younger students, one of the reasons is they're pulling them out.
Well, and they promote football.
And they're fighting to try to get music either to stay on the curriculum or fighting to get it back on.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what Dr. Ott just said about his daughter is the people that are the students that she's going to school with are not happy with the system that's being presented to them on a computer. I'm paying all this money, I'm spending all this time, but yet I don't feel like I'm getting a proper education. So you have enough of those people that get angry and they leave or they go someplace else. It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable to teach people like you're teaching a computer.
It is if you want to control them, if you want
to
turn them into
slaves. That's true. But apparently these young minds don't want to be controlled. At least not the ones that I've been introduced to. And I used to work with several young people when I did photography. And surprisingly enough to me, back in the early, late 90s and going into the early 2000s, I was coming in contact with people, young people in their 20s that were very unhappy with the system, very unhappy with the schooling that they were receiving, and were very knowledgeable of what was going on, and they were not accepting of the fact. One young man who was probably about 27 had already gone through the military, and he left it because he did not like the way that, you know, things were going on in the military. He wasn't going to make a career out of it, and he told me some things. So it was interesting to me to be around the young minds that you think are being manipulated, but apparently there's a lot that are not, and they're not happy and want change, and they don't want the change that they're putting forth or, you know, making, trying to make these people, you know, fit into the box. And they don't want to be in the box.
When you sell insurance, Eve, do you tell the people, do you present the insurance to them like this? You know, like you may have a young couple just got married and they're buying a house, each have a car, they want to have kids, you know, you want to help them prepare. Do you tell them, here's how insurance works. You pay me money now, and when you die, I'll pay you money. Do you
that's
tell
basically
them that?
How it works. I mean, that's how insurance is set up. You're buying a program that's going to take care of you if something happens to you. You're investing in, you know, a policy that will give you insurance in case something goes wrong.
Yeah. Well, when the insurance commissioner tells the agents and the agencies whose policies they have approved that they have 40 days to answer a claim, you tell me why they get away with dragging that out for years. We're talking about an initial claim, whether it's on a health insurance policy or an accident policy or a death policy. Why do they drag their feet? We know the answer to that, but why should that be tolerated?
They don't want to pay it.
Is what I'm saying. Why should
they're dragging their feet? There's a reason they don't want to pay it, and those are probably the real expensive, you know, policies that are, you know, maybe $1 million or $500,000 or something like that.
As we all know,
corporations do not like to pay out. They like to pay in. They like people to pay in, but they don't like to pay out. And they have the money to fight.
It's because of where the money is. You see, because insurance companies are really holding companies. They hold the money. Or do they really hold it? AIG was this big, big company. Why is it that they all of a sudden didn't have any money? Why did they have to be bailed out? You see, it's because of the shenanigans going on in the background. That's the essence of what we're talking about here. Eve, I want to thank you for your call. You've been on a long time.
Yes, I have. And thank you, gentlemen, and you have a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too, and keep listening. Okay.
All right, I will. Bye-bye.
Dr. Ott, would you like to comment on that before we wrap tonight?
Well, yeah, it's just when you're in it in the system. I graduated, of course, with a bachelor of arts degree, and then went into accounting. And you know, you're young, you're wanting to please your parents. You want to find a mate. You want to live the American dream. So you really don't think outside the box. Most people don't. I didn't. And most people, I admit, in that age bracket, you just go and lock time with, you know, the people beating the drum. And it's just in the last 15, 20 years, you realize that, my goodness, the drum is beating the wrong cadence. And it's strange that in the 60s, the hotbed of protest against, you know, an unjust war happened to be our college campuses. What has occurred that now we have not one but two unjust wars going on, young men and women being maimed and killed for something that's a lot worse than the Vietnam era, and yet the college campuses are deathly quiet about it. You know, I think it has to do with a whole lot of mind programming going on, whether it's your video games or just the system itself. I submit the young college age kids, for the most part, have lost their abilities to critically think. And I think it's by design.
Absolutely. I mean, it's dumbing down this outcome-based education is just get them to pass the test. We know if they can pass the test that we can program them to believe certain things. I don't like using that word, but it's a belief system. They want their students to come out and be ready and so hungry and desperate to pay off those loans where there was no money really exchanged, that in fact, they're making money on that money from that initial insurance policy. They're making a ton of money.
And the worst programming, in my experience, has been the medical schools. I mean, you're talking a sleep deprivation. You're talking, during, the 3 years or so of study, the internship. All of this is designed to – it's like a boot camp structure. You break down the individual and put his or her mind so full of their dogma that they truly believe that a vaccine of poison is a good thing for you.
Yes. Or any vaccine for that matter.
They're all poisonous, yeah.
Yeah, as I always say, if we were meant to have vaccines, we would have had a syringe somewhere, maybe in our rear end, when we were born.
Well, give them time. They may change the DNA to provide that. So don't give them any ideas there, Don.
they've already thought that one through and more, believe me.
Those are called pinheads,
yes.
Not coneheads.
Yeah.
Needleheads.
Well, we could go on and on and on. I hope you kind of enjoyed this approach to handling a show because I agree with you. This is mind control and programming. Their goal is to control us. So they're going to use the devices in the ways that they've proven to work in the past. Television. The mindlessness of television now is so prevalent that I think I have to rewrite Frank Zappa's I'm the Slime, the song about TV, and come up with a different word, to describe it. He described it perfectly many, many years ago, 30 years ago, and it still applies today. It hasn't changed other than it's gotten worse. It's a complete propaganda tool.
Well, talk about propaganda. Look how, these high school graduates, these university graduates, for the most part, they dress up in this costume. They don't ask the questions what they're doing this for. They just do it because it's customary. They sit in these dark robes with a silly little mortarboard hat. I mean, if you look back, it's just ridiculous. It doesn't fit. You have to clip it with paper clips on to hold it in place. You march down the aisle to pomp and circumstance, pompous up your aunts. You just do it for show, like, see, I did what the system told me to do.
Do you think we really see it that way as 18-year-olds, 17 and 18?
Of course not, but the parents, for the most part, are so proud. Look what my baby has done. And all they've, all they've really done ultimately is just, again, set the mind in stone. No critical thinking, no obtuse thinking of really what's behind the curtain. Yeah, it's just the system.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah. Well, we had that in the marching band. I mean, they had majorettes. Now, orchestras don't have majorettes.
Yeah.
They may be playing in the French horn section or violin or flute or something, but by and large, they don't, because it's inappropriate to wave the magic wands. They have the conductor doing that. Okay? He's waving a wand. The girls twirling the batons are waving wands. It's a magical ritual that they're doing. And we don't really question that. The majorettes just had to know how to count to four or two and go left, right, left, right, stop, and twirl the baton.
And look good in a mini skirt and tights.
Yes, exactly. Throw it up in the air, catch it. Sometimes drop it. Ooh, if she dropped it. Oh, everybody went, ooh. They felt so bad for her that Merlin or Merlina didn't quite perform. She wasn't supposed to drop it, but...
Wasn't that what Don McLean was trying to say in American Pie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Marching band refused to yield. On and on. Yeah, well, it's been an interesting show, Don.
It has. We covered quite a bit, and I think we brought a lot of clarity to what's going on. You know, the things that we said about America, freedom to fascism, we're not slamming Aaron Russo. He was a friend of mine. I don't know, based on what he said in the movie, I think I was more of a friend to him than Nicholas Rockefeller. So he was a good friend.
There you go.
And you too, True, for that matter. You know? But,
well, I met him briefly, and we did communicate on the phone a few times about content. He was willing – he wanted to go more into my information in his second video that he was going to produce. And, you know, when he had the cancer, I gave him some references over in Germany, the Kneipp Institute group. And I think it helped him, but I don't think that was circumstantial.
I don't either. It happened very quickly.
It did.
Upon his return. About 3 months, I would say. Mm-hmm. Hardly the results that he was reporting on to us from Germany.
Exactly.
He went through a few days, 3 or 4 days, where he was totally out of contact with anyone. And then little by little, he made more contact and, you know, more frequently and for longer durations. And then he came back and we began a campaign. Suddenly, this was not to be seen in theaters, and we had set up quite a number of showings, and we're in the process of negotiating on theaters and allowing people to advertise. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, it's no, we're just going to do a DVD. Mm-hmm. It got very strange at that point, and started mirroring certain other websites and. You know, documentaries that were out. But I appreciate you being on the show and sharing all that wonderful information. And, yeah, we had a good conversation with Eve, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all was good. Good night, Don, and God bless you.
All right, we'll see you next week. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network over at BBS Radio. Doug Newsom on the sound tonight. Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my guest will be Mr. Michael Anthony. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.